Hare Krishna, everyone. Welcome back to our ongoing series on the glories of our most beloved Sri Vrindavan Dham. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pastita Deshutarane. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, we're continuing with our mini-series on the Binding Rope of Spotless Love, and this will be part four. I was thinking the other day why we are giving, all of us are giving so much time and effort to prepare and from your part to hear these lectures. And the answer is very simple, so that we can remember Krishna. By constantly hearing about Krishna, we'll naturally come to the stage of always remembering him, and that's the goal. Srila Prabhupada would often say, to always remember Krishna and never forget him. And I found in a beautiful letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to one of my godbrothers, Prajapati Das, on May 16, 1976, Prabhupada stresses this importance of remembering. He wrote, "In general, we cannot say that any of the nine processes of devotional service are more important than the others, except that if hearing, chanting, and remembering are there, that is the most vital consideration for the general class of people in this age. Except that if hearing, chanting, and remembering are there, that is the most vital consideration for the general class of men in this age." So in this quote, Srila Prabhupada stresses hearing, chanting, and remembering. Often devotees, we naturally stress hearing and chanting. Not so much the remembrance, it's called smarana. But we should know that although kirtan is the main process for this age, it's the yuga dharma, such kirtan is meant to facilitate smarana, remembering Krishna. In the Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instruction, verse 8 in the purport, Srila Prabhupada actually describes the various stages of progress for a sadhaka, meaning a practitioner of Krishna consciousness. He begins by describing Shravana Dasha. Yeah, he says it's the first stage where one hears about Krishna, especially chanting Krishna's name. This is the process for a new devotee. Then Prabhupada goes on to describe Varna Dasha, the second stage, wherein such a devotee accepts Krishna as his life and soul, and then he gets initiated and increases the practices of hearing and chanting, kirtan. Then Prabhupada mentions stage three, Smarana Dasha, the stage where all the hearing and chanting leads to a spontaneous remembrance of Krishna. Spending years hearing and chanting, well, for what? So we can always remember Krishna, like in a spontaneous way. So in this way, all our efforts are meant to reach the platform of Smarana Dasha, as Prabhupada explains in that purport. In fact, the name of our society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it's all centered around Smarana, always be conscious of Krishna. So we should mold our lives in such a way that we have sufficient time for hearing and chanting, with the express purpose of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him. Thus, this series of lectures that we've been giving the last few weeks, it's all been organized to help facilitate the smarana of what? Damodara Leela. This is the famous Leela of this particular month of Kartik. So lots of lectures on Lord Damodar, Mother Yasoda, binding the rope, etc. So, you know, after Kartik, we can think of these things, remember these things. That's the perfection. So in our last lecture, part three, we left off where Mother Yasoda was struggling to tie naughty Krishna to a grinding mortar so he couldn't engage in any more mischief so that she could go back to attend to her household duties. Her problem, quite simply, was that the rope she was using to bind Krishna was two fingers short, you remember. Or as Srila Prabhupada writes Krishna book, 2 inches short. And this was the case, actually, even when Mother Yasoda got extra rope and tied it to the original rope still the rope was 2 fingers short. Now, much has been said on this phenomena. It's 2 fingers or 2 inches short. But very few devotees know that the very first commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya was written by a lesser-known author named Srila Srinath Chakravarti. Srila Srinath Chakravarti. He was the guru of Srila Kavikarnapura. We all know Kavikarnapura. And Srinath Chakravarti's commentary is called Chaitanya Mata Manjusha. Chaitanya Mata Manjusha. Translated, this means a bouquet of the philosophical positions taken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A bouquet of the philosophical positions taken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, in his commentary, this devotee, he says the following about the 2 fingers, or the 2 inches. Ekam bhakta parishmaha aparam madhya. Aparam madhya kripa. He says these 2 fingers represent, number one, the effort of the devotee, and number two, the Lord's mercy. In other words, trying to get this rope together will require the effort of a devotee, in this case Mother Yasoda, and the Lord's mercy, Krishna's mercy. Now, we've heard that before. Many of us have heard that before. Finally, you know, by her effort and by Krishna's mercy, the task was completed. Any task in Krishna consciousness is completed, therefore, by the effort of the devotee and the Lord's mercy. Now, our devotee commentator, Hari Suri, he starts speaking, or he begins a commentary on the term guna, on the term guna. Now, the term guna has several meanings, actually. In the beginning, he points out too, he says, guna can mean the modes of nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. And number two, he says, guna can also be, in Sanskrit, it can also mean rope. So it's very interesting. Sri Hari Suri says that while the great gunas, meaning sattva, rajas, and tamas, are unable to even touch the body of the Supreme Lord, what to speak of binding him up. Krishna is transcendental to the modes of nature. So these gunas, because he says, you know, the great gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, they're unable to tie Krishna up. So then he says, he plays on the word, how is it possible then that the small gunas, the actual ropes that Mother Yasoda had, would be able to touch and bind the body of the Lord? It's interesting. Therefore, he says, it was impossible for these small gunas, these small ropes, to bind the Lord. If the big ropes can't do it, how will the small ropes? Nice play on words. Of course, we all know and we all celebrate that Mother Yasoda did, in the end, tie the ropes together, tie the 2 pieces of the rope together, and successfully bind to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada states this very nicely in Krishna book, chapter 9, he writes, then Lord Krishna, appreciating the hard labor of his mother and being compassionate upon her, agreed to be bound up by the ropes. There it is. The hard labor of his mother, Yashoda, and his compassion. 2 things are required. So, with her effort and the mercy of Krishna, the task was completed. Now, at this point, it's very interesting. Hari Suri explains why Krishna agreed to be bound up, because he didn't have to agree. So why did Krishna finally agree to be bound up? And at this point, Hari Suri, our commentator, he again brings up the word or the term guna. Now again, guna can mean the 3 modes of material nature. It can mean a rope. But guna can also mean good qualities. So he's playing again with this word, guna. Can also mean good qualities. So Hari Suri quotes Krishna in this regard, these good qualities. He quotes Krishna. Krishna says, Lagumapi mat bhakta gunam hardashtito nayami purnapadam. Krishna says, quote, my devotee may be lacking in some gunas, good qualities. But due to his being dear to me, I myself complete his incomplete gunas. Wow. We may be missing, but Krishna makes up. He's so kind. He makes up for our lack of good qualities. And that brings to mind for myself, one time Srila Prabhupada in a darshan, he was saying how it takes lifetimes of pious activities to be enabled to come to devotional service. You have to, you know, perform many, many pious activities over many lives to qualify yourself to come to Krishna consciousness. So he was speaking in this way. And at the end of the darshan, he asked if there were any questions. And one disciple raised his hand. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you know, you were saying it's by pious activities we qualify ourselves to one day become a devotee. But I'm sitting here in this temple and in your presence. But honestly, Srila Prabhupada, I did not perform one pious activity in my lifetime. It was all sinful activity. So how did I get here? So Prabhupada, he kind of sat back and he closed his eyes for a moment and then he opened them and he smiled and he said, yes, I created your pious activities so that you could come and sit here. Same principle. You had none, but I created your pious activities. I gave you this gift. Like this. That was interesting. So, indicating this fact, the Supreme Lord himself arranged the completion of Mother Yasoda's incomplete gunas, meaning in this case the ropes. He made up for her lack of ropes by himself agreeing to being tied like that. Oh, Hare Krishna. Now, there's a big secret. There's a secret about this pastime that only a few Gaudiya Vaishnavas know about. But I'm going to share it with you now. It's authorized. And what is this big secret about this pastime? Well, I found out through research, again, seek and ye shall find, I found out that the name Dhammadhar literally means, of course, Dhamma Udhare Yasya. Dhamma Udhare Yasya. He around whose stomach is a rope. Dhammudharyasya. Now, of course, many of us assume that Krishna got this name, Dhammudhara, when Mother Yasoda was successful in binding him to the mortar. But here's the big secret. It was not the first time that Krishna was bound up in that way. So how can I say this from an authorized standpoint? Well, Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami says in his Radha Krishna Archana Deepika. It's one shastra he wrote. Radha Krishna Archana Deepika. That the original pastime of being bound, Krishna being bound, took place long ago in Goloka Vrindavan. And he writes in verse 108, Ekada Kartike Mashri Purna Masya Mahotsava. Listen to this. He writes, once in the spiritual world, it was the day of Deepavali. Krishna was supposed to meet Sri Radha on that date, but he was late. When he finally arrived, Radharani looked at him with loving anger and then quickly bound him up using her golden girdle belt. Using her golden girdle belt. So now Krishna's tied up. He's bound by her golden girdle belt. Damodar. Then Krishna, and he folded his hands and he said, Radha, please, I'm sorry I'm late, but it's not really my fault. There was a big festival at Nandagaon, and for that reason, I couldn't leave. I didn't want to be late. So hearing this valid excuse, Sri Radha decided to let him go. So when she did, she untied this golden girdle belt. Krishna was very pleased. And from that day forth, he said, I will take great pride when someone calls me Dhammadhar, the one who has a rope or a string around my belly. From now on, I'll be very, if you call me Dhammadhar, I'll take great pride because Sri Radharani tied me up in that way. And then Krishna said he would later manifest the same pastime during his appearance in the material world on the earth planet, but next time, with Mother Yasoda. With Mother Yasoda. And Jiva Goswami says, he writes, so that devotees of all rasas could relish this pastime. Namadhar. Everyone relishes this pastime. All pastimes of Krishna are wonderful. So that the form of the Lord that was bound by this, you could say, this love of Sri Radha has a particular name. The original Damodar is known as Nivi Damodar, N-I-V-I, Nivi Damodar, the original pastime. Both pastimes are equally wonderful. So coming back to this Damodar pastime on earth, Srila Prabhupada continues in Krishna book chapter 9. I'll recite what Prabhupada has written. He wrote, after binding her son, Mother Yashoda engaged herself in household affairs. At that time, bound to the wooden mortar, sometimes we hear stone, sometimes we hear wooden, Krishna could see a pair of trees before him, which were known as Arjuna trees. Just in your mind's eye, just imagine, Mother Yashoda's gone off, Krishna's bound, can't be naughty, and he's looking around, you know, like a small child would, and what does he see? He sees trees. They're called two trees, actually, are called the Arjuna trees. Now, it actually mentions he saw a pair of Arjuna trees. Now, this species of tree, this Arjuna tree, it has a peculiar white-colored bark. In fact, one meaning of the term Arjuna is white. So the Arjuna tree is characterized by its white color. It's just an interesting fact. So Srila Prabhupada writes that there were two Arjuna trees who were known as Yamal Arjuna trees, Yamal Arjuna. The term Yamala actually means twin. So again, there were two trees who were what? They were two brothers, actually, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, who were previously cursed by Narada Muni to become trees. And in this part of this Damodar Leela is that we'll see how Krishna liberates these twin brothers from the curse of Narada Muni to become trees. But first let's discuss how and why these two boys ended up as trees on the property of Nanda Maharaj. What was the curse? It's an important part of the pastime. Well, historically, before these two personalities became trees, it's described they were very proud, very troublesome sons of Kuvera. And who's Kuvera? He's the demigod of wealth. And I was reading how they used to wander, because they lived in the heavenly planets, obviously, and they're devatas. So they used to wander in a garden attached to Mount Kailash, the abode of Shiva. They used to wander and play on a bank, actually, of the Mundakini River. And there they would drink a kind of liquor called Varuni. And they would bathe naked in the waters of that river with women. It's described, you know, in Shastra, in the association of such women, they would wander in that garden of flowers on the banks of that river, their eyes always rolling in intoxication. Now, enter here our commentator, Hari Suri. He points out, he gives a very interesting perspective here. He points out that there are many rivers in the heavenly planets for the demigods to enjoy. That's Svargaloka, that, you know, you, if you're very, very pious, you go there to enjoy, and there's just basically enjoyment. But it's still the material world. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So it's not a perfect place to go. It's not perfect. In fact, Shastra says the main anxiety of Svargaloka, because there's so much pleasure, is that there's a rumor going around. Rumors come about that the demons are coming. So that's the anxiety. Otherwise, they enjoy. So they're allowed, you know, this enjoyment until their pious activities run out, the results of their pious activities, and they fall back down to the earth planet and start all over again. So they were, you know, enjoying. But Hari Suri points out that not all the rivers are meant for that type of enjoyment, especially the Mondakini River. The Mondakini River is solely meant for spiritual purposes. There's obviously devotees in the heavenly planets. They've woken up and they realize the higher purpose of life is to become Krishna conscious, so they engage in spiritual activities. So this Mondakini River is meant solely for spiritual purposes. Now he says, if these two boys would have sported in some other river, Svargaloka, meant for the demigods, Narada Muni would have never come there. Now, Narada Muni came to Kailash because it's a tirtha, it's a holy place, and because he wanted to bathe in the Mondakini River because it's a purifying river. Now as soon as Narada Muni arrived at that place, we also hear in Krishna book, the ladies immediately covered themselves up. At least they had the good sense to cover themselves in front of a sadhu. Thus the ladies were saved from getting cursed. However, these two boys remained naked, and in that naked state, they greeted Narada Muni in kind of an intoxicated manner, not very respectfully. Now, Narada Muni recognized, obviously, that these two boys were intoxicated due to drinking Varuni liquor. However, Hari Suri points out there was a greater intoxication that Narada Muni saw. What is that? He saw that these two boys were affected by Shrimada. What is Shrimada? Shrimada translates as the intoxication of wealth. Hari Suri says that this is the worst type of intoxication that one can have in this world. Intoxication is not a good thing. You can make many, many mistakes in an intoxicated state, grave mistakes. But the worst type of intoxication one can have in this world is this shrimada, this intoxication of wealth. Because when one is very wealthy, he doesn't see any need for spiritual life. So Hari Suri warns us that devotees of the Lord should be very careful of the shrimada. He says, as soon as a little wealth arrives in our lives, I like that term, as soon as a little wealth arrives in our lives, he writes, we should immediately purify it by giving some of it in charity. It's a nice instruction. We should immediately purify it by giving some of it in charity, just like Sri Rupa Goswami. He was very wealthy, being employed in the government of the Muslims in Ramkeli. And when it came time for him to escape from there, he gave a lot of that wealth away in charity. He gave some to the Brahmins. He put a little bit aside for emergencies, but most of it he gave away in charity. So there's an example. He kept some for emergencies, but he divided it in different ways. So Hari Suri also writes that devotees should not think that because they're on the path of bhakti, this shrimada, this intoxication of wealth, will not affect them. And then he goes on to point out how various great personalities, lost everything due to this shrimada, this intoxication of wealth. And he gives four examples in this regard, citing four great people, who he says ended up breaking regulative principles due to shrimada. Now, let us first say that these are all great personalities in our scriptures, and we shouldn't think they're in a fallen condition. Very often great souls, they humbly accept these positions to teach us by example what to do in these situations. So that being said, the first great personality who he describes became affected by shrimada was King Dasharatha. King Dasharatha was having so much wealth that he would often go on large-scale hunting expeditions and kill many deer, as Kshatriyas sometimes do. And on one such hunting expedition, things went terribly wrong, and he ended up accidentally shooting and killing Shravana Kumara. He was the only son of his parents who were blind. And his parents then died out of shock and grief upon hearing that their son had died. So what did they do? They cursed Dasharatha to die in a similar manner, out of separation and grief from his son, who we know was Lord Ram. Thus Dasharatha broke the rule of no meat eating by killing deer, and this all happened because of Srimata. He just had so much opulence, so much wealth, he'd go on these large-scale hunting expeditions, killing many deer. So he broke the rule of no meat eating. And this all happened because of this great wealth he had. Now the second person that Hariswari points out is Maharaj Yudhishthira. He became so influenced by his newfound kingdom of Indraprastha, he says, and his newfound wealth, that he ended up playing a gambling match twice and lost everything, including his kingdom and his wife. Thus he says, Yudhishthira broke the rule of no gambling due to his Srimada, his intoxication of wealth. Watch out. Then the third example he gives is Ravana. Of course, this is not a personality you want to emulate, but he writes that Ravana was actually a great scholar. He was a Brahmana, and he was a commentator on the four Vedas. And actually, he was a descendant of the sage Pulastya. But he became, again, so intoxicated due to his wealth that he lustfully kidnapped Sita Devi to try to enjoy with her. In doing so, he broke the rule of no illicit sex. And this happened due to his Srimada. Now the fourth example he gives are these two boys, Nalakuivera and Manigriva. They were intoxicated by their father's wealth. Who could have more wealth than Kuvera, the demigod of wealth? And they were so intoxicated by their father's wealth, they ended up drinking liquor and losing all good sense in front of Narada Muni. Thus, they broke the regulative principle of no intoxication. And this, too, happened because of the Srimada, intoxication of wealth. Hare Krishna. Now, at this point, Hariswari writes, Narada Muni knew that there is only one cure for a person whose eyes are infected by Srimada. The cure is to apply the stinging ointment of daridya, poverty, on such infected eyes. So he continues saying, Hariswari, that if these two boys were made to suffer poverty, they would very soon realize how other living entities in the world also suffer. And once they suffer, they will not want others to suffer in the same way. Thus they would become sober, saintly, and cured of a Srimada. So it's actually true. We see sometimes in this world, you know, someone rises up from poverty, they get an education, they have a successful business, and because they experienced poverty, suffering in that way when they were young, they're more inclined to give to people in a fallen condition. It happens like that. So for the benefit of those two intoxicated sons of Kuvera, Narada Muni cursed them to lose all their wealth and become trees, because trees don't have any wealth in the sense of, you know, jewelry. Of course, maybe at Christmas time people put some ornaments on them, but it's all imitation jewel. Now, it's written that as soon as they were cursed to become trees, they came to their senses and they begged Narada Muni to forgive them and relieve them of that curse. But it was too late, because we stated many times that when a curse is uttered by a sadhu, it must take effect. However, you may remember, it can be adjusted. So out of compassion, Narada Muni adjusted it. And he told the two boys that they would stand as trees for a long, long time, but one day they would have darshan with the Supreme Lord Krishna and be relieved of the curse. So Hariswari says at this point, Ruste pi tushte pi va. What is the result of getting a sadhu's blessings? The result is that one gets access to the Supreme Lord and gets his darshan. And what is the result of getting a sadhu's curse? Well, first of all, it's beneficial because ultimately one is purified. But sometimes, as in the case of Nalakuvera and Manigriva and other, well, not other, but in the case of some demons, the result is the same. One gets darshan of Lord Krishna. Some demons were killed by Krishna, and they went back to the spiritual world to have his eternal darshan, like Putana. When Putana was killed by Krishna, she went to Goloka Vrindavan, it says in Shastra, and she became a nurse in the house of Nanda and Yasoda. In other words, she would give her breast milk to Krishna on certain occasions. So, you know, she was cursed to die. Krishna killed her, but she went back to the spiritual world. So Hari Suri concludes that irrespective of whether a sadhu is pleased or displeased, the end result in coming in contact with a sadhu is almost always beneficial. And Hari Suri writes, he says that a sadhu is like a sandalwood tree. Even if an axe strikes it with an aim to chop it down, the sandalwood tree leaves its fragrance on the axe. Similarly, a sadhu gives benefit to everyone, even if a person is a ruffian. A ruffian comes in contact with a sadhu, but the result is that he's left with some benefit. Like the axe when it tries to chop down the sandalwood tree. The aroma of the sandalwood tree remains on the axe. So, nice analogy. Of course, Nalukuvera and Manigriva, they had to wait a long time to obtain any benefit from Narada Muni's curse. Shastras say they had to wait millennia to have darshan of Krishna. But that moment arrived, and Prabhupada very nicely describes it in Krishna book. He writes, after binding her son, Mother Yasoda engaged herself in household affairs. At that time, bound up to the wooden mortar, Krishna could see a pair of trees before him, which were known as Arjuna trees. We quoted that verse before. So Hari Suri says that when Krishna saw those Arjuna trees, he thought to himself, hey, these two are having the name Arjuna, who's called Partha. Another name of Arjuna is Partha. These two having the name Arjuna, same as my devotee, but they are Apartha. Apartha meaning not the sons of Puritha, like Arjuna was Partha. In fact, they are Apartha, Apartha meaning devoid of all wealth, or deprived of all wealth. I should again make them Kritartha, fortunate. Thus the Lord decided to liberate them. Nice play on the name Partha. Then Hari Suri writes something that I really appreciate, and I'm sure you will too. It really resonates with an ISKCON devotee. He writes, the Lord is truly merciful. All sadhus should learn from him. Even though he himself is in bondage at this point, he is thinking of liberating others. This indeed is the nature of a true sadhu. The sadhu wishes to liberate others even if he himself remains bound in this world. That's speaking for many of us. We're conditioned, but we're being taught by Śrīdhara Prabhupāda to share our good fortune with others. So even though we're bound up, we're working to unbind others. And that's our qualification, to become unbound by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahāprabhu, who appreciates such seva. At this point, I read something really amazing, really special. I came across a verse composed by the guru of the guru of Hari Suri. The guru of the guru of Hari Suri. He poses the question, who is the personality that bestowed the highest benefit on these two Arjuna trees? He's throwing a question out here. Who is the personality who bestowed the highest benefit on these two Arjuna trees which were liberated? Now, some of us may be tempted to say, well, Narada Muni. Others will say, well, obviously Krishna. But the answer and the reasoning behind it to this question, it'll take you by surprise. Hari Suri's guru's guru, he says, all right, let someone say that Narada Muni showed the highest mercy on these two Arjuna trees. Let someone else say that the Supreme Lord showed the highest mercy. However, I confidentially say that the greatest mercy on these two trees was bestowed by Mother Yasoda. What? How is this so? Well, he goes on to explain, it was only because of Mother Yasoda, or it was because of Mother Yasoda, who managed to put the Supreme Lord in bondage. She put him in bondage. She tied the rope and put him in bondage, tied him to the mortar. And when he was put into bondage by her, it's understood for the first time he knew what bondage actually was. And thus he no longer wanted to see these two trees suffering their bondage. He was very uncomfortable being tied up by Mother Yasoda. So when he saw others in bondage, out of compassionate nature, he wanted to free them. Thus he quickly proceeded to release both trees from the curse of Narada Muni. So therefore the credit goes to Mother Yasoda, because she was the one that bound him up so he could come to this conclusion. So Srila Prabhupada describes in Krishna book chapter 10 how Krishna brought down these two trees and ended the curse. He writes, although child Krishna was bound up to the wooden mortar, sometimes we hear wood, sometimes we hear a stone mortar, but he began to proceed toward the twin trees in order to fulfill the prophecy of his great devotee, Narada. Lord Krishna knew that Narada was his great devotee and that the trees standing before him as twin Arjuna trees were actually the sons of Kuvera. And he thought, I must now fulfill the words of my great devotee, Narada. So then he proceeded through the passage between the two trees, and although he was able to pass through, Prabhupada said, the large wooden mortar got stuck horizontally between the trees. Taking advantage of this with great strength, Lord Krishna began to pull the rope which was tied to the mortar. As soon as he pulled, the two trees with all their branches and limbs crashed down immediately with a great noise. So then Hari Suri, he asked an important question. He said, why did the Lord bring down the trees using the mortar? He could have easily just struck them down with his hands and achieved the same. Why use the mortar? I mean, Krishna has killed many demons with his hands, even as a child. So why did he use the mortar? Well, he gives a beautiful reply, Hari Suri. In an interesting way, you have to pay attention to this one. He writes, if a guru personally carries out a difficult task, it brings him some reputation. However, if an anuga, a faithful follower, does the same task on behalf of the guru, it brings greater repute to the guru. Oh, just see, your follower has done it by your mercy. Then he continues, now our Krishna is Jagat Guru, spiritual master of the entire universe, and this mortar is his faithful anuga, because it was following Krishna wherever he crawled. He's crawling and the mortar is following behind. So he's an anuga, he's a follower. So Hari Suri said, thus Krishna ensured that his anuga mortar, who was following faithfully behind in his footsteps, carried out the task of bringing down the trees. So the mortar gets credit, eternal credit, in the eyes of the world, like that. So instead of, using his hands, he wanted to give credit to his follower, who was pulling behind him. Interesting analogy there. Now, as soon as the trees came down, there was a loud noise, as I mentioned, and at this point, it reverberated throughout Vrindavan. At this point, the Brajabasis, it's described, they felt as if they'd all been struck by a thunderbolt. And as such, Nanda Maharaj and all the Brajabasis came running to the spot. And Srila Prabhupada describes what happened at the end of this wonderful pastime, because everyone's looking, like, seeing these two trees crash down, two effulgent personalities emerge. And there's little Krishna, with the mortar. It's like, how did this happen? So in Krishna book chapter 11, Prabhupada writes that some of the cowherd men told Nanda Maharaj, your child is different from all other children. He just might have done it. So smiling to hear about this extraordinary abilities of his son, Nanda Maharaj came forward and he untied the knot to free his wonderful child. Mother Yasoda had tied it and the father untied it. Hare Krishna. So I'd like to finish today with a beautiful verse written by a close friend of mine, whom I often consult to see if everything I'm saying is authentic. I've mentioned many times Hari Parsha Prabhu of the GBC Shastric Advisory Committee. he wrote in Sanskrit. He's a Sanskrit scholar. He wrote a very beautiful verse tying in the, you know, Mother Yasoda's tying up Krishna and Krishna's father Nanda Maharaj untying the knot. It's an interesting verse. Listen carefully. He writes in Sanskrit, "O Domodar, through this particular pastime that took place in the forest of Braja, you taught us all an important lesson. The lesson is that even if the mother ties one up, it is the merciful father who rescues and liberates the son." Even if the mother ties one up, it's the merciful father who rescues and liberates the son. "Now, O Lord, please note that I too am staying in the forest of the material world for many lifetimes. My mother is Maya Devi, who has created my material body and tied it in this forest using the three ropes of the three modes of nature. But if she is my mother, then who's my father? You're my father, O Domodar, isn't it so? Your father, Nanda Maharaj, untied you and liberated you. So when will my father come to untie me by giving me the gift of his prema?" Hare Krishna. Jaya Sri Prabhupada. So, thank you so much. I think we'll get one more lecture out of this pastime. I'll look and see. There's some beautiful prayers that we can analyze. Manigriva and Nalukavera's prayers. I think that can be another class. But let's see. We're really busy here in Vrindavan. We're going out almost every day with 400 devotees and six big buses to different Leelasthans. And I'm obliged to speak out there as well. It takes a little preparation. So a lot of lectures, lots of preparation, and lots of devotees to see, and lots of god brothers and god sisters to meet and to chant our rounds and everything else. But I love the service, and I want to keep all of you connected to Vrindavan during this most important month of Kartik. So we'll find time to prepare, and we'll be with you again next Friday. Thank you so much. Shishi Gaurani Tai Ki, Shishi Krishna Balaram Ki, Shishi Radha Shyama Sundar Ki, Vrindavaneshwari Shrimati Radharani Ki, Mother Yasoda Ki, Dhamadara Ki, Mayapur Dham Ki, Shishi Gaurani Tai Ki, Shri Krishna Sankirtan Yajna Ki, Nitai Gaur Pimanandi, Jai Jai Sisi Radhe.